If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or home computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Artists, musicians, and busy creative professionals, how would you like to outsource your nagging to-do list? You should call Vicky at My Virtual Gal, virtual assistants to handle those things keeping you from your craft, booking appointments, managing emails, tallying numbers, or editing your business blog. My Virtual Gal can handle it all, short-term or long, daily, weekly, or monthly. Check out myvirtualgal.com to book your free discovery call and explore the possibilities. You'll be amazed how productive you'll feel with a right-hand gal, My Virtual Gal. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. This week, we'll be playing an interview that we did with our friend Lou Mansdorf, the man behind Rum Bar Records, Boston's hip garage and punk rock label that's been putting out some amazing product lately. Not lately, for a few years now. Before we play our interview with Lou, I want to turn the clock back all the way to January 1984. It was back then that I hopped on an airplane for the first time in my life, and I had a one-way ticket to LA with dreams of making it in the music business. And I didn't have any money. I had 200 bucks, but I did have a couch to sleep on right on the Hermosa Beach Lawndale line, which was in the South Bay of LA County, and right near the beach. It was awesome. It's where all the cool bands came from, and SST Records was located there and in Hermosa, and right next door was Enigma Records in Torrance. Well, upon arriving to LA, my goal was to get a job as soon as possible. So it was a little different back then. There's no internet, there's no cell phones, there's nothing. You just get on your phone, you call somebody, you hope you can get them on the phone, you go do the interview. Well, instead of doing that, I decided, you know what? I was pretty young. I was like 22, and I'm like, I'm just going to go right to the Enigma office and see what happens. So I didn't have a car yet, so I took a bus, and I had to transfer a few times, and I made my way to Torrance from Hermosa Beach, and I walked right into the Enigma office, and there's a bunch of people sitting in this room. I didn't know any of them at the time, but, you know, Bill and Wes Hine were there, and a few other people, Ron Gowdy, R.I.P. And I walked in looking for Kim Jones, who was the radio person who I used to communicate with on the phone when I was the music director at WDJM in Framingham. Well, I found Kim and said, hey, I'm Steve Ricardo. And she talked to me, and I told her I came there looking for a job. And she was pretty honest with me. She goes, you know, there's really no jobs here. If I was you, I'd go to a major label, try to get a job working in the mailroom. So I kind of left there a little depressed because my goal was to get a job at either Enigma or SST, and I didn't have a phone number, and I didn't know where SST was located. I just knew they were in Hermosa Beach. So I went all the way back, and I found another number scribbled on a paper bag, It was, the name was Sandra Gustian, and it said Green World Distribution. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this person a call. So I call her, and she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know what? We're looking for someone in the sales department. Can I transfer you to my boss? His name's Paul Murata. So I basically, I'm on the phone with Paul Murata. I tell him who I am. He's like, can you come down here? I'm like, yeah. He gives me the address. It's the exact same address that I was just at. I'm like, wait a second. That's Enigma's address. He's like, yeah, we're part of Enigma. We're the sales division. And I'm like, you're kidding me. I was just there. And he's like, well, can you come back? And I'm like, yeah. So I went through the whole bus routine again. I went back down there. I ended up talking to Paul. He said, I'm going to call a couple people in Boston. I'm going to do a little research on you, which he did. Called me the next day, said, you're hired. So why am I telling you this story? Well, I'm telling you this story because Sandra Gustian, who answered the phone and transferred me to Paul, passed away this week. And I worked with Sandra for 3 years. We worked together in the sales office for about 9 months, and then she moved over to the label side, and then I soon followed. And we were like, there were like 8 of us when we started, 8-10 people max. And we ended up growing very rapidly after that because we signed Poison, we signed Striper, we signed the Smithereens. We had to move to a new building. We moved to El Segundo. We had like, it was a great time to be in the music business. And the time I spent at Enigma pretty much paved the way for my entire career. And when I heard Sandra passed away this week, I figured I would tell you this little story as a tribute to her. We spent 3 years together, like I said, working together. We were in touch after that. We were friends on Facebook. And I was extremely sad to hear about her passing. So I want to dedicate this show to Sandra, who, along with Ron Gowdy, were the two people I worked very closely with at Enigma. And they're both gone now. And it's sad to have to say that, but it's part of life, unfortunately. People go. And just wanted to mention that about Sandra. All right, before we play our interview with Lou Mansdorf, here's a song from the Rumbar Records catalog. This one is Sway Little Player by the Shanghai Lows.
Again.
All right, let's welcome to the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast, the pride of Astoria, New York, Mr. Malibu Lou Mansdorf. How's it going, Lou?
All right, all right. Hey, Steve-O. Good to be on here. What's up, everybody?
I know that you're from Astoria because we talked about that, and I used to live there. I was wondering if you could tell us about some of your early stories about growing up in Queens, in Astoria, in that Greek neighborhood. And I know you hung out with a lot of the New York hardcore dudes, and I know we were at a lot of the same shows, like the Giant Records Showcase. So why don't you tell us about, you know, growing up in Queens and what it was like living over there.
I definitely will, and I'll try to keep this tight and brief on it. It's Astoria, and as you mentioned, a Greek neighborhood, but essentially is really a melting pot, a very eccentric, eclectic, ethnic neighborhood. I don't know if more so in all of Queens, but, you know, it borders on Greenpoint, Brooklyn. It borders on, you know, right across the river is Manhattan, Long Island City, and then from there, boom, you start going out into other parts of Queens. So growing up in Astoria from then until like high school, I just knew Astoria, Manhattan. You know, if we were visiting in the car to other friends, you know, those were all on another planet, another island. And Astoria was... originally, but a very big Jewish community and population before it turned into that big melting pot.
I didn't know that. I always thought of it as a Greek neighborhood. You know what I mean?
It became a Greek neighborhood as I was growing up, you know, definitely through elementary school, meeting a lot of Greek kids and then learning Greek restaurants and stuff like that. But you could probably count at one time, probably when my parents were kids, my parents met in Astoria. They lived a block across the street from each other, but they were initially, my father was from the Coney Island area of Brooklyn. So when you think of all those old Jewish neighborhoods in Brooklyn, a lot of those families, when they were moving out of Brooklyn, they moved to Astoria. Because again, you got from Brooklyn, you start coming to Williamsburg, Greenpoint, right. Astoria. There was probably like 7 or 8 synagogues. The beginning of Archie Bunker's place and all of the family was filmed down a street in Astoria. And, you know, like, again, going back with the Jewish heritage, I believe there was a Jewish girl that he adopted later on the series. The shul that was filmed in, the Bat Mitzvah, was there in Astoria. My father grew up in an Orthodox Jewish community in Astoria, Queens.
That's cool. You know, I took the N and the R train, like, basically all the time because I was in L.A. and A&M transferred me to the New York office, which I greeted it with open arms. It was a good move for me. And I didn't know where to live. And I somehow found this really huge 2-bedroom apartment in Astoria, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to live in Queens. Manhattan is just too expensive. But it was really convenient. Your 59th Street Bridge was right there, you know. You could get over there really quickly. And I figured I'd bring that up because I knew that you were from Astoria. Now, you hung out with a lot of guys in bands when you were there, too, didn't you?
Yeah. So what I was going to get to in the early 80s, or I guess, you know, late 70s, early 80s, when hardcore started coming up in New York City, a big population of that was from Astoria. I mean, I'm talking Token Entry, I'm talking Kraut, Leeway,
nice.
Murphy's Law, all those bands, Astoria bands. Jimmy G from Murphy's Law and Joe Bruno, they lived across the street from me. My band's first show at CBGB's was opening up for Murphy's Law
in
1987.
Cool.
And you know how it happened? Jimmy G's mother came into the supermarket deli where I worked and said to me one day, you know what, Lewis, that's what everyone called me in the neighborhood, was Lewis at the time. Lewis, I'm going to ask my son to put you on a show. I'm going to ask my son. It went on for weeks. It went on for months. And then one day he comes on in. Hey, you're that Lou guy my mom keeps talking about. I'm going to put you on a show. Just like that. It was unbelievable. That's how that friendship and relationship started.
I used to see a lot of those bands because I was This is before I lived in Astoria. This is the first time I lived in New York when I was working for Giant. The hardcore matinee at CBGB's every Sunday afternoon, I was at that hardcore matinee. I got to know the token entry guys. You mentioned them. Crowd I had worked with before because they were on Enigma. Murphy's Law I saw over there too. All of those bands from that era were fantastic, man. It was like the 80s in New York was like, they came a little late to the hardcore party, but once they arrived, those bands really made their mark.
No, they all did. And like, you know, with those hardcore bands, like with any scene, they had their baby bands under them. So, you know, under bands like Token Entry, you had the New York Hoods, which was a very popular young hardcore band. Those were my classmates. I went to junior high school with the New York Hoods. Me and drummer Kevin Burns actually also played in our first band together before he started getting into hardcore. Then it was the New York Hoods. Another baby band was actually Ernie Parada from Token Entry. His older brother, Ray Parada, his band, Abomination, but I call them a baby band because they would be the band to support Token Entry and Murphy Law, but Abomination, too, another popular Astoria hardcore band. Members of Kraut went on to form Gutter Boy, which, you know, was later when hardcore bands started doing more like, you know, rock and roll type stuff where you talk about like the Giant Records bands, you know.
You're a lot like I am, Lou. We spent our whole life surrounding ourselves with talent. That's how you do it in the music industry, and that's why you're running a label. So let's fast forward a little bit here, and I met you around 2002, the Abbey Lounge, man. That's where everybody was hanging out back then. And I know, why don't you tell the story, man, because you were telling me you remember the day we met, and I thought that was cool.
This is a great. This is what brought me there. So, and going back to bands. So, I'm leaving Boston. I'm leaving New York for Boston 18 years ago. I was working with Roadrunner Records at the time, hard rock heavy metal label. And at the time, you know, a lot of these radio stations. When you think back then, you had BCN, you had AAF, you had FNX. All of them playing hard rock and heavy metal. So all these record labels had regional radio reps in the markets where they had a lot of radio play. So we had a radio rep in Boston for many years, but never had a sales rep up here. So, you know, one day was like, hey, Lou, you want to go to Boston? You're always going up there anyway for work. Yeah, why not? I had very good friends of mine. Some people refer to him as my cousin, the other Mansdorf here in Boston, Larry Mansdorf, who's also from New York.
I know Larry.
And you know Larry well, and you know his old bandmates from the Auto Interiors, Eric Waxwood and the Chief, Bruce Caporel. So I'm coming up to Boston to move in with those guys, Bruce and Eric. Kind of all, it was like the three of us were moving at the same time. They were moving from their current Boston apartments, and I was moving from New York. I'm coming up here, and a very dear friend of mine, still to this day, Lindsay Kowalski of a band called The Kowalskis, also going back to the music scene, she was a co-owner of Coney Island High, which was a popular club in New York City.
Yeah, great club.
And Lindsay says, I'm going to set you up with some good friends of mine. I'm going to let all these people know that you're coming. Sends out an email, I believe, to Evan and Linda from Muck and the Mars and a bunch of other bands. I get up to Boston, and I'm moving in, and the Auto Interior Cats, they're actually out on the road playing out of town that weekend. So I'm moving in, and the old roommate that was moving out was Todd of Missile Thrush. He was living in this apartment as well. And he says, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, I wanted to go out. I'm not going to go out with you, but there's a bar down the street. You know, you come out, you make a left two blocks down. You can't miss it. I never go there. Not my kind of place, but I think you'll like it. He looks at me and says, go try it out. I go down there, and, you know, it was early in the day. It was a Saturday. And I walk into this, you know, dark lit place, and I hear Kiss. And, you know, later on, maybe some Cheap Trick and Dictators all playing on that jukebox which is right by the bathroom at the front door. The old Abbey Lounge. Jay Grimaldi, you know, one of the owners, was behind the bar. I'm just like, holy fuck, man, this is my place. This guy nailed it. So I'm hanging out. I have a couple of ciders. I'm talking with Jay Grimaldi. He's like, listen, you should come back later. We have music in the other room. I say, great. I come back later. Who's working the door? Michelle Paul is from The Dents, who just happens to be one of the people that Lindsay Kowalski reached out to. I'm talking to her. Bands are about to play. It was back when Wendy Abbey used to do, what was it, 20 bands in two nights series.
Yeah.
Heavy Stud was the first band going on. We're talking. As we're talking, she realizes that I was Lindsay Kowalski's friend, who she had been referred to get in touch with me. And, you know, I hang out that night. I do come back again, like a couple of days later. I don't know if that was the night I met you or if I met you on my next time there, but I recall being in the bar, seeing a flyer on the wall, Twisted Rico, Acoustic Tuesdays. I'm like, who books these? I got to play. And whoever it was next to me says, there's Steve right there. I walk over, introduce myself. I'm Malibu Lou. I'd really like to play. I'm from New York. You say, how about next week? I say, great. And I walk out of there saying, I don't have an acoustic guitar. I haven't played acoustic in many years, and I'm playing in less than 7 days. I better get this taken care of.
That's rock and roll, man.
Start of that, yeah.
Wow, so then I know that you ended up hanging out there a lot. You played a bunch of those shows. And we were talking on the phone the other night. You brought up the Sylvain Sylvain show, which is one of the most legendary things that I ever was personally involved in, because someone basically handed me Sylvain on the platter and I put him on a Tuesday night show. And I remember the capacity was 110. And we sold 110 tickets, basically. And, you know, there were Caged Heat played, and I can't remember who the other bands were. There was another band on the bill, but you brought that up. You were at that show. That was an amazing night, wasn't it?
Amazing night. I mean, again, Sylvain, a legend. And this was long before the New York Dolls reunited.
Right.
And as Lisa, my wife, said, she said that people were hanging off the rafters. Yeah. People were so excited. They were so psyched. What a show. I remember he had like a dude from Texas in like a 10-gallon
yes.
hat singing the David Johansen songs. The band ripped it up. Sylvain hung out afterwards. We all bought T-shirts. And just like, I just remember everyone in attendance. It was just imagine a thankful like evening. We were all just so joyous to like hear those songs, to see him play. And in such a setting, I mean, when you're in a room, 100-capacity room, you know, that generally, I think from any of us that played there and that listened to bands there would cite that as one of the best sound systems in town.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I mean, you couldn't have asked for what a better experience to remember. We still talk about that show to this day. Legendary.
Yeah, and Lisa is right. There, you could not move in that room, man. It was like completely packed. And it's sad now to talk about this since Sylvain passed away. And, you know, I ended up, the Charms, who I was managing, ended up doing a national tour with the Dolls a few years later. So I got to see Sylvain a lot, and we talked about that. And he didn't forget that show. He said he would never forget it. It was that cool. Because all these people in other bands were mostly, out of the 100 people, there were like mostly people in bands there. It was like you could have got every cool band in Boston together in one night and said, let's all go hang out with Sylvain. And that's exactly what happened.
And Sylvain was just such a beautiful soul.
Yeah.
I'd say every member of the New York Dolls was, because we, years later, after the Dolls reunited, we got to hang out with the band at Irving Plaza in New York City backstage at a very small intimate meet and greet before the show, because working with Roadrunner Records, they were on Roadrunner.
Right.
And it was like each of us talked with a doll, like David Johansen was with my friend Bruce, was with Mark Hudson, a good friend of ours. The drummer was with my friend Bruce. I had on either side of me Steve Conti and Sam Yaffa chatting with them, and Lisa and Sylvain were like huddled in a corner, and he was like telling the story of his family from Cairo, Jewish heritage.
Yeah.
And I remember him like taking her hand in both of his and thanking her for being at that show. They were talking about it. And again, going back to him telling you how he remembered that show, he telling her, I remember that show. Thank you for being there.
I mean, really, exceptional.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Exceptional.
So let's, there's a lot to talk about here, Lou. So let's fast forward a little bit. Why don't you tell us how you started Rumbar Records and how that whole thing happened? Because you got the hottest label in town, dude. I mean, everybody knows about Rumbar. I mean, you guys are the garage rock, punk rock champions of the world. So how did this all happen, man? I know we both followed the same path, because I worked at Roadrunner before you were at Roadrunner, and we did the label thing, and you're still doing it, man. It's so cool.
Thank you.
How did you
pull
it off?
That. I appreciate what you say about the label, and to put it best, a good friend of mine, Jim Testa from the Jersey Beat, Rum Bar.
Yeah.
He refers to Rum Bar as a gonzo hybrid garage power pop alt country punk rock bubblegum label, and he's right.
Jim is great with the quotes, man. Jim always
great
comes through with the quotes.
He had two great quotes, so I'll have to email those to you. But that the gonzo hybrid and the glue to the label is the family and the family tree and the roots. Because you ready for this? Who did you have on your show a couple of weeks ago? Our beloved Jeff Palmer.
Jeff Useless, who I like to call him.
Here we're gonna go. Jeff Useless. Well, I knew him then as Jeff Useless. I met him in 1995. He was maybe 15 at the time.
The Queers?
And
was it was he in the Queers at the time, or the Guts, or
he was in a band called She's a Guy, which later on became the Guts, and the She's a Guy guys, you know, did those Queers records as well. And this is Jeff, Nate Doyle, and Rick Orcutt, aka Rick Six. So you had Jeff Useless, Nate, and Rick. I was on tour with good friends, the Go to Hells. We came through Boston. We came through New Hampshire. We partied and played with bands like the Tunnel Rats and the Queers on that tour. And we went to the legendary Fish Track Studio in New Hampshire for the Go to Hells to record some songs with Joe Queer. And who's there in the studio with us? Jeff, Nate, Rick, and someone else was there, Tamara Collins. I met them. They were kids. I was young 20s at the time, mid-20s, and we've had a friendship ever since then. And so you want to fast forward now. I'm here in Boston. Literally, it was shortly after I had gotten laid off from my previous job, not Roadrunner, but I was working with Universal Music, so still working for the music system. And I got hired shortly after that time, working for Traffic Entertainment, which is another music distribution company based out here in Boston. I'm working for Traffic, and I'm thinking, you know, I want to start putting out my own music again. And at the time, I started listening to the Underground Garage very heavily. And who do I hear, like, every day on the radio? This band, The Connection. I come home, I swear to you, and I'm like, Lisa, you got to hear this band, The Connection. They do this version of Seven Nights to Rock.
Yeah.
Wait. They're from Portsmouth. We know 100 people in Portsmouth. Someone's got to know who they are. So I send an email out to everyone I know in Portsmouth, and who writes back? Jeff. All right. I'm glad you like it, Lou. That's my band.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God. You know, Jeff. At the time, I'm like, this is Jeff. She's a guy. Jeff the Guts. I was booking his band, The Guts, at the Abbey Lounge. You know, I booked them with Chicks Dig It at the Abbey Lounge. I booked them with The Dents at the Abbey Lounge. I had no clue. Years later, he was, you know, we were out of touch maybe like 5 months. You know, time goes by. You don't speak, and then you see each other again, and it's like yesterday. I had no clue about this band. I'm like, dude, we're putting out a record.
Was that your first band, The Connection?
Yes.
Wow.
On the Rum Bar at the time. That's cool. The Connection was my first band, which led me to, you know, Jeff and Brad Marino.
Yeah.
And it just stemmed from there. We did two LPs and a 7-inch, and that kicked off the label. Those LPs sold like hotcakes. They were, you know, and they would work with a bunch of different labels, which I think Jeff kind of told how that all works on his podcast. But they were doing some music with someone in Spain, someone in Europe. They were going to Spain. And so I did, you know, what we deemed as the, you know, Rum Bar edition of their vinyl. And at the time, it was still a lot easier to do vinyl than it is today, which is why I really just strictly focus on CDs and let vinyl-specific labels focus on vinyl. But The Connection started it all with the Rum Bar. That was it.
That's fantastic. You know, I don't know if I told you this story, but Jeff Palmer was doing like a cow punk thing for a little while, and I had him on my last compilation that I released, and they were going to play the show that we did up in it was in the college part of town there at UNH, and we got this show together, and he's like, hey, you know what, I got a new band, do you mind if I have my new band play instead of me doing a solo thing? And I'm like, cool, who are they? He goes, The Connection. I was at the first connection show. There's a lot of connections between us, Lou.
Yes, there is. So, you and I could probably run our own podcast for months on end.
So that was the beginning, and now you got like so many cool bands. I played one of your newest bands to open your segment here. It's the Boston Supergroup with Dan Kopko, Jenny D., from Jenny D and the Delinquents, Chuck Ferreira from Eddie Japan, and my very close friend Lee Harrington from the Hoods, the Shanghai Lows. You got something there, buddy, with that band. They're smoking.
I love it. Thank you. You have a Shanghai Lows, and they're like a gonzo hybrid of power pop, garage rock, and girl group sounds, a lot of soul in it. And, you know, again, this is a family tree, you know, connected to me. Dan Kopko and I go back to when I moved here. His family and my family, we break bread together. Our daughters, you know, he has two, I have one. They're great friends. They play together. They hang together. Jen, you know, was in Vidence.
She's been in so many good bands.
Working with her, Michelle, and Craig on a new Dence project as we speak. She and her husband, Ed V, are working with I on some Jenny D stuff.
Nice.
She and Danny Vickie and the Shanghai Lows are working with the Rum Bar right now. I mean, I love it. And in this pandemic, her daughter Sid, who's the same age as Danny's girls and my daughter, they became virtual friends. They play Roblox together every day. Like, I can't wait for the day that they actually get to meet in person. You know, also stemming from this family here, Danny's in Watts. You know, Danny's
like
a prolific songwriter.
Good band.
Watts has a new record coming this year. You know, Watts is also one of Rumbar's original bands. I've been working with Watts for years now. Who else in this band? You mentioned Chuck.
Well, you know, my guy Lee Harrington from the Neighborhoods, man.
I love Lee Harrington. And you know, Lee Harrington and I, this is our first time working together, but I love Lee. We've been wanting to do something together. And he's very close friends. He grew up with the singer of the Gotham Rockets, another band under Rumbar. Like, you know, it just everyone in this family here is related to someone, knows someone, played with someone on the label. I mean, it's like, the question is, who's put on the most Rum Bar releases? Is it Jeff Palmer? Is it Kurt Baker? Is it Johnny Lynch? I mean, is it Chris Fingers Rogers?
I love that you have a family, dude. I love the family. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you know, now also just to bring up real quick, is it, you know, Morten Henriksen of the Yum Yums? He's now on a couple of Rum Bar releases. Is it my Minneapolis connection with the Raymonds, Georgia and Travis? They're BB Gallini, they're the Short Fuses. They've played with, you know, Johnny O'Halloran, who he and his wife Steph are a Rum Bar band. They've played with them in another band. I mean, everyone is connected here on this label. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm finding some really cool bands, too, like Haley and the Crushers, Cheap Cassettes. And you've got Freeloader, Nat Friedberg, who's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, and Brad Solo stuff, Brad Marino. I mean,
Brad Marino,
Dogmatics.
All prolific writers. The Dogmatics, they did release She's the One. We had a Newbery Comics exclusive. I mean, that was a first for the Rum Bar and for the Dogmatics to have an exclusive record with Newbery Comics. Incredible. And those guys are working on new music. You know, Jerry Lehane's released his solo stuff with the Rum Bar. All the O'Halloran brothers are working with Rum Bar Records. You know, the O'Halloran family tree, the Dogmatics family tree. You know, and all these guys are prolific. All these guys and ladies are all prolific songwriters. It's an incredible songwriters. When you think of Muck, that guy wrote...
Muck and the Myers, yeah.
He must have wrote 4 albums in 2 years. You know, when everyone shut down, Muck ramped it up, man. He got himself a green screen. He and Linda made videos. The band is, I think, at their peak right now as far as writing and recording, making music, making videos, putting smiles on everyone's faces.
Yeah, they got,
man.
Pete, too. They got Pete, man, from the Ape Hangers.
Yep.
And I'm going to play, actually, at the end of the show, their version of I'm Your Man, the old Ape Hangers song that they redid. Telling you, adding Pete to that band, oh, I can't wait. I've seen the videos, but I can't wait to see them live with Pete and the band. Because, you know, Evan was always a huge Ape Hangers fan. I remember he always, when I was managing the Ape Hangers, they always wanted to do shows together. I mean, so it only makes sense that the Rumbar family would bring everyone together.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I do a lot of bundling things together because these bands go, like when we talk about my hybrid, you know, I got my alt country, I call them Rebel Rousers, these bands, and that stems from me working with Tom Baker and the Dirty Truckers.
I love the Dirty Truckers.
I mean, and Tom, you know, too, he's making a new record as we speak. Tom Baker, you know, under that tree, you got Tad Overbow, you got Scrimshanders, who Chuck from, you know, the Shanghai Lows is now playing in as well. I got a Scrimshanders record coming up. This past month in March, I did the March Madness trifecta with new records from Indonesian Junk, with new record from B.B. Galini, with a new record from Electrolux. This also dates back to a band I worked with 25 years ago. Scotty D. from Electrolux and I were roommates 25 years ago. Unbelievable. And he and his brother and I got back together just before the pandemic hit. We got together in New York and we talked about Elux doing something new and me putting it out there. And, you know, again, it's just everyone connecting together. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you're like a machine, man. I mean, how many releases you putting out a month? I mean, you're like, it's like the old days, man. I feel like I'm back in the 80s when the independent labels exploded. We got the big label right here down the road, Rumbar Records, man. I mean, I can't believe how many releases you have, Lou. It's phenomenal, man.
It's a lot. It's a lot of work, you know. I just wanted to say it's not easy.
Oh, I know.
It's definitely my labor of love, and like, you know, I got my family, got my day job, and I put this all in between. But I love to promote the bands that I love. That's what I want to say. I don't just love to promote bands that, you know, anyone can do. I want to promote the bands that I personally love. Music that I love to listen to.
You know,
I can sit down and put on any of these Rumbar releases and listen to it all day nonstop. I'm grateful and so thankful for these bands to work with me, to put their music entrusted in me. And, you know, one of my artists, it's really because of her, but I do what I do. I'd love to just bring up Genya Raven. I mean,
a legend.
Legend, trailblazer, icon. She's been doing this longer than anyone. Anyone I know, probably anyone you know, and still at it today, and she entrusts me with her music. She entrusts me with her legacy, and boy, did we put out a fantastic release this year with her, Nile Rodgers on guitar, a split 7-inch single with the Shanghai Lows, and, I mean, Genya just still can sing, I think, better than anyone else. I'm sorry, I just gotta say that. She's truly...
You should know, man, with all the bands that you've worked with over the years. I mean, you know, man. You know, something you said really hit home with me. You said you're in love with all your bands. I used to tell bands that I worked with, you fall in love with them. That's what it's all about. If you fall in love with the band's music and you fall in love with the band, you're the best person to represent them. That's what every band needs, someone like you, Lou. So, I mean,
Thank you.
Is like fantastic. So, I mean, let's talk about Freeloader for a minute, because I think that's a really interesting all-star lineup project. I mean, that band is like loaded with talent. How in the world did you get hooked up with Nat Friedberg and those guys?
You know, Nat, I haven't known Nat that long. You know, I've known who he is. You know, again, keep in mind, I'm not from here, but always, you know, of course, been a fan of the Upper Crust. I used to go see them in New York City a bunch. And Nat and I started corresponding just a couple of years ago because we thought it would be when they started ramping up playing again and releasing new music. You know, we just thought it would be a good fit for them and Watts to be doing shows together.
You know,
these bands play a lot with a lot of the same bands, and it was like, well, here's two bands that haven't played together. You know, same similar genre, hard rock, but different fan bases, different crowds. Let's get these two bands together. And we actually paired them up with, oh boy, because the pairing was off the hook. I don't want to keep pulling time for this. I bet Nick Z there. Nick Z, who played in the Party Boys that played in this band? Chrissy and Chrissy are in the band. Come on, who am I thinking of?
Chrissy and Chrissy?
Chrissy Vaccaro and Chrissy Tierney.
The Petty Morals.
Yes, that was a trio. That was off the hook of bands. We brought these three bands together and wanted to do a series of shows. So that's all. They fit.
That makes sense. Yeah, they were a hard rock band, too. They changed their name, and I can't remember the... They had another
Petty
name.
Petty Morals, and we were all friends, and everyone brought an A-game to this, like, partnership and trying to, like, branch out. Petty Morals were looking for a different, you know, a different fan base to, you know, play to. Watts were looking for a different fan base to play to. And Upper Crust was looking for a different fan base to play to. So I was like, let's all get... I was talking with all these three bands individually about doing something. Then I was like, let's just bring you three together. And so it stemmed from there. So a year later, after that, Nat reaches out to me. You know, let me tell you, Nat's a world-class guy. I just want to say that, Nat, because he didn't just reach out to me about working with his new release a couple of weeks ago. He reached out to me to say, Lou, I want to congratulate you on the success you're having with the Shanghai Lows and Muck in the Myers.
Wow, come on, man.
Beautiful. How do I not want to continue working with a, you know, class act and a class act musician? The guy's music is so off the hook. He just keeps on reinventing himself, but it's still Nat. And so he came to me, maybe it was 2 years ago. I'm going to write, he had the plan. I'm going to write three records and release three records in 1 year. You know, maybe they were already all written, but he's like, I'm releasing. And he had the plan. It's going to be a Nat Friedberg solo record, and he started working with someone that he'd never worked before, Ducky Carlisle, and they made this great rock and roll album. And then I'm going to do this thing, Freeloader, which you want to talk about, the all-star group.
Charles Hanson, right?
Yep, Charles Hanson on guitar, Janota on drums, and Jim Haggerty, again, who I know from Albany. He used to play in a band called Rocky Velvet.
That's a great lineup right there. That is a great lineup. I know Jim and Nat have a long history together, but adding Charles Hanson to that mix and Jim Haggerty, like when I heard the record, right, the first Freeloader, and there was that song, It Takes 10 Songs to Make an Album, I was like, this is brilliant. That song got me, dude.
And again, another family tree right there. I'm working with Justine and the Unclean. Well, who's her guitarist and drummer? Janota and Charles Hanson. Yep. I mean, these musicians, you know, and again, I think Justine and Nat musically have played ways back and you know, like-minded bands. So again, like another family tree connection.
Well,
here.
Justine's been around for a long time. She was in Malachite, you know, which is a great all-girl metal band way back, man. Yeah, she's... I forgot about Justine and the Unclean. That's a great band right there.
Great band. They were putting on their own shows, their own fests, and again, like doing great stuff for the Boston music community right there. So going to Freeloader, he says, this is my all-star group, and we're going to be more like, you know, we're not going to be the Upper Crust, but that's the hard rock thing that people know and will expect from Nat Friedberg. And the Freeloader record, again, incredible record. After that, he went back to his third album, his solo album, a little different, but just with great rootsy rock tunes, a little dash of country and soul. And then the pandemic hits just as that record came out. You know, we've kind of, you know, kept in touch because, you know, who doesn't follow everyone on Facebook? So we see how everyone's doing. And Nat hits me up just a couple of weeks ago, again, like I said, to congratulate Rumbar on the successes of the Shanghai Lows and Muck in the Myers with the radio and press that these two bands have been bringing, you know, bringing in, and says, by the way, I got a new Freeloader record. It's done. Dude, we're mixing and mastering it with Paul Q. Coldery. What do you say?
How do you say no to that?
Bring it on. And so we've launched what we're calling Freeloader Thursday.
Wow.
Lisa says, what about Freeloader Friday? I'm like, I like Freeloader Thursday. Come on. So Freeloader Thursday, every couple of weeks, we're not telling you which week, but every couple of weeks, we'll be launching a new Freeloader track.
Great idea.
Freeloader Thursday, it will be launched on both the Nat Friedberg Bandcamp page and on rumbarrecords.com, which you can get everything Rumbar Records related at rumbarrecords.com. All our music, CDs, vinyl, merchandise, t-shirts, winter caps, baseball caps, or actually trucker caps, everything. Rumbarrecords.com.
I got to get one of those trucker caps. I want one.
Get the trucker caps before they're gone. Just check it out. Tell your friends about our webpage. And we also have a ton of free downloads. Like, when I say downloads, I mean like samplers. We do winter samplers.
I like your samplers.
We do alt country samplers. we did a Melton Records sampler, which is off the hook, like celebrating the 25-year history from Melton Records, and that's where a lot of Rumbar Records roots comes from, is Melton Records. So check out that free sampler. All of that's at rumbarrecords.com.
Forever the brilliant, forever the brilliant salesperson. Lou knows how to sell. Lou, I got to ask you about one more band, because I can't believe how fast the time's going by here. The Dirty Truckers, you know, we mentioned them briefly before, but I've always been a big Tom Baker fan. I think you mentioned to me that they have a new record they're working on as well.
Yes, as per Tom, the Rumbar has exhausted the Dirty Truckers and Tom Baker catalog. Like you said, I've sold it all. I may have sold like lint out of Tom's pocket. So the band is recording as we speak. Lynchy will be laying down drum tracks at
John
Minahan's.
Yep.
John Lynch at Woolly Mammoth Studios, I believe this week, for hopefully 10 songs. And then Tom Baker, Jamie Griffith on bass, and the master, John Brookhouse, on lead guitar, I believe are all recording their parts at home, because none of them are venturing out to studios yet. They're all going to record everything remotely. And we're going to put together a beautiful new Dirty Truckers record, man. Bring it on, I say. And anyone that wants to check out the Dirty Truckers, like I said, you could catch their catalog at rumbarrecords.com. You know, definitely, you know, ask me what you want about Baker and the boys. But
I'm guitar, every time I listen to the Dirty Truckers, I'm like, Tom's always got these great guitar players. You know what I mean? He's like, it's just like guitar. I guess you could call it like alt country, but you know, it's still got a good rock element to it, you know? And it's like, Tom's one of those guys where I always felt like, wow, how is that guy not bigger than he is? You know, I always thought he was someone that would break out of this scene and like go further. I'm so happy that you're working with Tom, because he needs someone like you, Lou. Definitely.
Yes, I love Tom's music, everything he writes, and you know what, Tom's music and his catalog is truly, you know, you say not bigger, but it's celebrated, man. If people hear the Dirty Truckers, they love it. If the Dirty Truckers were playing live, their show, whether it's 10 people or whether it's like, you know, 60 to 70 people, it's always a great time, and people know the words to his songs. I mean, come on, you know. I was just going to ramble off a few names of some of his songs, but you know them, man.
Yeah, here's the thing. I listened to, I know they did a Liars cover too recently.
Yep, Help You Ann was on Second Dose. So this is going back to like how busy we've been during the pandemic. That's when like things shut down. And I was like, what are we going to do? And I was like, you know what? I want to start doing these short runs of CDs. I purchased a CD robot, they're called, from someone who you probably know very well, Ken Smar of Wonder Drug.
Oh, yeah, I know Ken, of course.
Yeah, the machine that he was using to make all his Wonder Drug stuff, we got off him a couple of years ago.
Wow, nice.
And I was like, I'm going to start running these short runs, and let's do stuff. And we did like a Muck in the Myers compilation. I said to Tom and Tad Overbow, let's do a Dirty Truckers, like, we'll call it Second Dose, because it will be like a second helping of songs that didn't make the best of record, and that's where Help You Ann comes in, and we found another song from the archives to put on it, and we did like a Tad Overbow retrospect, and then I did an Indonesian Junk like B-sides release, and all of a sudden these things just started rolling. It was like, well, all we need is 100 copies. Next thing I know, we're out of those 100 copies. You know, maybe we should have pressed, you know, a little more, but you know, I'd rather just get the music out there, get it heard. And so we just really focus heavily on you know, getting these songs heard on these great indie radio stations that support us. You know, a lot of them include the Real Punk radio stations, Tommy Unit Live, Greg Lonesome, The Ledge. You know, also you got Boris at Woody Radio, The Secret Weapon, and there's a lot of great radio shows on his station. You got Radio Candy that just started their own indie radio station. You know, and then the Sirius stations and the Sirius DJs, Bill Kelly.
I love Bill Kelly.
Del Ran, Genya Raven with her two shows, like all these stations playing great indie bands and indie labels. And, you know, that's like our fan base. That's who we want to hear these songs. And, you know,
Lou,
again,
you've,
it's like
you've,
all of them know the Tom Baker name and Dirty Trucker's name. That's why I say he's celebrated, you know, because people are like, what's coming next from him? You know, they just know it and love it. And so the pandemic brought on us. We're home. Let's do these.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then you got, and then like you said, everyone shut down. And Muck's like, I'm ramping it up. I'm writing a new record. I'm making videos. And then everyone started doing little things like we talked about with you at New Alliance. We're going to send, you know, one person into the studio to record the drum tracks or vocals, and everyone else is going to do their stuff at home. And we've found a way to adapt. I, as a label, have found a way to adapt. It's incredible.
Lou, you've broken the record for the most names dropped on the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast. It's the 87th show, by the way, 87th. And you've broken the record officially. We have someone here counting the names of the bands. And you're in the hundreds now. I'm just teasing you, man. But you covered a lot, dude. You covered a lot. And listen, you're a great guy, man. You know I love you, man. From when we met, we've always had a great relationship. And I love your label. I love what you're doing. You know, I love garage rock and punk rock. They're my two, you know, genres that I put at the top of my list, along with hardcore and metal. I just did four. But you know what I mean. But I mean, garage has always been my favorite. So I want to wish you the best of luck, man. And I want to thank you being a music
fan. Thank you.
You
know, I appreciate it. And again, like one thing we didn't touch on, which maybe we should just real quickly and briefly.
During
the pandemic and before then, you know, like I said, again, you know, people, you know, have a mystique of thinking the label's bigger than it is because, like I said, these bands and artists are celebrated and they get play, you know, but sales are what they are. Like, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm just like, this is a very small label. It's a small, tight family, and I'm doing what I love with the music I love. But it's what's been incredible is that bands that I've been fans of and artists I've been fans of have been coming to the Rum Bar. Again, you know, all right, you can say Muck and the Myers are local, and they're dear, best friends of mine, but they're an international band. They have released on a dozen
labels,
and they still work at the Rum Bar. Jeff Palmer, Brad Marino, I'd put them in that same wheelhouse. What about Kurt Baker? I mean, the guy is an international prince of power pop, and he still
prince
calls the Rum
of
Bar
power
home,
pop.
You know.
The Prince of Power Pop.
You know,
I love
you
it.
Know, and that guy is still an amigo here at Rum Bar Records. You know, you also got Morten Henriksen, the Yum Yums. I mean, during the pandemic, he came to the Rum Bar and said, hey, I'm looking to release my new record, and Kurt Baker said I should be working with you. I mean, what do you think of that? I couldn't have asked for a better compliment. Ken Fox of the Fleshtones, not just the Fleshtones, of the Fleshtones and Jason and the Scorchers, and the guy's a sweetheart.
You're still dropping names. I love it.
A sweetheart of one of the most popular garage bands out there today came to Rum Bar Records to work with on his solo debut. I mean, again, you know, I just wanted to bring that up. You know, I love all these guys. Haley and the Crushers, another band that gets a lot of radio play, that's really well known out there in their circle of friends, with the Pale Lips, Natalie Sweet, going back to the Raymonds. You know, all these bands have been out there, have done stuff, and they came to me to work with, which is incredible, and we've become such close friends and have such a close family bond. It's incredible.
I wish every label had a Malibu Lou. I really do, man. I really do. Hey, Lou, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You know, I've been trying to get you on for a while, so I'm glad we finally got it to happen. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best of luck with this label. Keep putting out the great releases. And believe me, you might consider yourself a small label. To me, you're friggin' huge, dude. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, thank you. And don't forget, rumbarrecords.com. You can get everything there. You can check us out on Facebook. We're the only Rum Bar Records on Facebook. And, you know, don't forget, this coming summer, we hope to have a Father's Day release from Stop Calling Me Frank, featuring Keith Strang and Count Zaremba of the Fleshtones on that release. I mean, that's going to be incredible.
Huge.
Brand new Watts record coming out. I mean, the sky's the limit. And talking about, you know, the number of releases, Rum Bar Records 100. We got the Raging Teens. I mean,
beautiful.
Summer, dude.
Kevin, yeah. Nice. Well, you know, this could go on forever.
It can. Let's do it again.
Definitely
thank you so
do
much
it again.
For having me on, man.
All right,
I love
Lou.
Doing this. And thank you, everyone out there. I just want to say thank you to our listeners, the label supporters, the label fans. I mean, again, you know, like I said, I wouldn't be doing this without my family of bands, and I wouldn't be doing this without, you know, someone who I idolize, Genya Raven. I wouldn't be doing this without you, you know, so thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate everything. The one and only Lou Mansdorf, Rumbar Records. And to close out this segment, we're going to play the Muck in the Myers tune, the remake of the A-Panger song, I'm Your Man. Loves Tacos is the real deal. We're talking about some fabulous Mexican-style cooking, probably the best this side of the Texas border, in fact. If you are near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or even if you want to drive 8 hours to get to Pittsburgh, you have to visit one of their outstanding locations, the original hotspot in Bloomfield and the newer locale in Millvale, right over the 40th Street Bridge. You will not regret it. Tell them Twisted Rico sent you, and please let Zach and John know it's time we get the band back together. We had an imaginary band. Baby Loves Tacos, where everybody eats. All right, today was just a lot of fun. Cool Hand Malibu Lou Mansdorf. I just extended his nickname. Cool Hand Malibu Lou Mansdorf, Rumbar Records. He brought the goods, man, no doubt. All right, we have some really cool guests coming on in some of our future shows that I just want to mention to you. Leah Callahan, who has played in some great bands such as Turkish Delight, Betwixt, and The Glass Set, has a new solo record that she just recorded at Galaxy Park in Salem, Mass. With Richard Marr, and she's coming on the show to talk about that. In a couple of weeks, we've got Nat Friedberg, who we mentioned earlier when we were talking to Lou, who has had a storied history with Boston bands like The Flies, The Titanics, and The Great Upper Crust. And now he has his latest project called Freeloader. He'll be on the show. And of course, backed by popular demand, Curtis Casella from Tang Records. We couldn't fit everything on one show. We have to do another show. Curtis has some incredible stories. His label is one of the best independent labels in U.S. history. So he's coming back on. So we're just going to keep bringing it, man. We're going to keep bringing it. please support this show and check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/TwistedRico, where you could support the podcast. If you want to reach out to me, TwistedRico@gmail.com. I have a bunch of questions I've been compiling, and one of these days, I'm going to answer all those questions. I have like 10, 15 questions from listeners, and I want to get them all together, and we're going to do a little segment on that. You can follow the podcast on Instagram, @TwistedRico, and also @BlowingSmokeWithTR, also on Instagram. There's a Facebook and a Twitter page. We're everywhere, man. Thanks a lot to Nick Z here at New Alliance East in Somerville, Mass. for doing another great job. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive. And yes, we do love you, Busy Phillips. Good.